You're getting a view into the locker room that you don't normally see.
A sanitized view.
Not a natural scorer.
The honest opinion, he's not doing the job that they hired him to do.
I just disagree.
Accelerating your hockey learning curve. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Send ahead now for Armia across the line for Buffett. Out in front of shot, they score! Andrew Ladd with a shorty! They get their 10th shorthanded goal of the year, and they tie it at 2. How about that, Andrew Ladd?
And with that, on Tuesday night, Andrew Ladd has scored his final goal as a member of the Winnipeg Jets. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. Good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Alongside Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. We have 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday morning. The NHL trade deadline comes up 2 days from now on Monday at 2 p.m. Central Time. So this is our NHL trade deadline preview show. We are going to go division by division. We will go team by team and get you set for all of the action between now and Monday's deadline, as well as review all of the trades that have occurred in the past week or so. That, of course, includes the trade of Andrew Ladd, former Winnipeg Jets captain, alongside minor leaguers Jay Harrison and Matt Frazier, to the Chicago Blackhawks for Marco Dano, a 2016 first-round pick, and a 2018 conditional third-round pick. I say good morning to analyst Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. Gentlemen, good to see you both. How are you doing on this Saturday morning?
Morning, boys. It's pretty early right now, an hour earlier than our usual time, but it's good to be back. We all got some sun. Missed last week's show. We should give a shout-out to Dave Manuk, Sean Asor, and Matt Leibel.
Yeah,
did an
absolutely
excellent job on Saturday covering for us. But it's good to be back. And it's been a while since we've done division by division, team by team. So I always love going throughout the entire NHL. I think it's going to be a very exciting time. I think there's going to be more trades this year than there were last year. I know Richie's going to be on air for most of the day on Monday with Rick Ralph. And I think it's an exciting time of the year because you know that the playoffs, Richie, are very close, and that's the best time of the year, first round of the playoffs.
Right.
So this Andrew Ladd trade is obviously going to be a big focus for us today, and it should be. It was a trade that we knew that was coming, and so I'm ready to go here.
I don't know if there will be more. I mean, good to see you boys. Obviously, it's been a while here. I don't know if there will be more trades this year than last year. I just don't know who's going to be traded.
Well, I think, Richie, there are some obvious names. Eric Staal is the biggest name left, and you know Louis Erickson is another guy that has the potential to sign with the Boston Bruins. Keith Yandel. I mean, there's a lot of guys that could potentially move. I think there are going to be some names that we haven't talked about that much
Sure. That
are going to move, and we've already seen quite a few players move already. I mean, you saw Christian Ehrhoff
for
Rob Scuderi, and you've seen some other moves. Obviously, Andrew Ladd going to Chicago was one of the bigger ones, but there's always seems to be a trade that you don't see coming. Not necessarily a blockbuster, Drew, but there always seems to be three or four major players that move. And
something out of left field, sort of.
Right. And yeah. So, I mean, it's possible, Richie, that there are less trades than last year, but I think with the lack of big names in the free agent market, I think you're going to see quite a few moves this year. I'm not saying there's going to be leaps and bounds, Drew, more trades than there were last year, but I think there's going to be a few more than there were last year.
Well, let's start with the trade from Thursday night, about an hour or so before the Jets and the Stars were going to face off in Dallas. Andrew Ladd was officially shipped from the Winnipeg Jets back to the Chicago Blackhawks. Since that deal's gone down, I've heard, you know, generally speaking, from most of the pundits, most of the analysts, you hear that the Jets did, you know, pretty well for themselves. They did, you know, that they got good value in return for Andrew Ladd, you know, that the grade is an A for what the Jets received back for Andrew Ladd. I don't know if I'm seeing it through, you know, different colored glasses or what it is. From my perspective, you know, the adjective I used on Thursday night when this trade went down was unenthused. You know, I was unenthused with the return that the Winnipeg Jets received for Andrew Ladd. And really, you know, and that's in the, you know, the eye of the tornado. 48 hours later, I haven't really changed my mind. I don't see any reason to have changed my mind. How did you, what was your initial feeling when the Jets shipped out Andrew Ladd? Did you have an adjective that, that popped into your head more than anything?
I thought that was what the market was, first round pick. It's going to be later. And it was going to be a prospect, but not a top-end prospect. Now, I don't know anything about Marco Dano, so I can't evaluate the trade in that respect. I just can't. I've never seen him play, so I don't know. But what I can say, and in the conditional third-round pick if they win the Cup, okay, sure, in 2018. Well, what I can say is, what is the plan here? And another question is, would they have gotten a lot more for Andrew Ladd had he been dealt earlier? You can't look at this move in a vacuum and say, okay, Kevin Cheveldayoff made a trade at the end of February and did all right. Kevin Cheveldayoff is the reason this trade was made at the end of February. Could you have gotten more before? And if you're signing Dustin Byfuglien to a five-year deal, and then you're trading Andrew Ladd, my question is, as of right now, it looks like this is a rebuilding team. I'm not sure what the heck it was the past 4 years, but this is a rebuilding team. Mm-hmm. So my question is, if you're signing Byfuglien for 5 years, and you're going to, it looks like as of now, you're not going to be very good next year, how many of those years that you're going to have him are even going to be something that you're trying to make a run? Because if you're not, then why did you sign him too? So I guess I'm wondering, what is the big plan here? Is there a big plan, or are you just selling an asset? Would you have to, so you didn't lose him for nothing?
Is it a rebuilding team, though? I think the goal this year was to make the playoffs, and the goal next year is to make the playoffs. And if you're a rebuilding team, I don't necessarily know that that's the goal. But regardless, I think I agree with you in the sense that Kevin Cheveldayoff put himself in this situation, and he was forced to trade Andrew Ladd because it didn't appear that they were going to sign him. They weren't going to sign him, so they had to trade him. Now, as far as the return goes, I've watched Marco Dano a little bit over the last couple of years. He's got 50 games of NHL experience. It's not like this guy hasn't played in the NHL yet. He played 35 games with Columbus last year.
Mm-hmm.
I think he had 20 points or something like that. He's got a lot of skill. He's a first rounder, a late first rounder in 2013. We were there in Newark. This guy's not big. He's got a lot of talent. I mean, if you watch some of his highlights, he scored some highlight reel goals. He's a talented player. How can we possibly evaluate who won this trade? It just happened 2 days ago. So, I mean, you can't give the Jets an A for this trade yet. I mean, this trade will be evaluated 2-3 years from now. And it's quite possible, I would argue that it's highly likely that this is a rental for the Chicago Blackhawks.
Yeah.
I don't think that Andrew Ladd is going to be signing with the Chicago Blackhawks. Why? Because they don't have a lot of cap space.
Mm-hmm.
So it's probably a rental, and this is a team that is going for their fourth cup in 7 years. So it's not a team that's just hoping to get out of the first round. I mean, this is a player that they're adding so that they can win another cup, a second cup in a row. Marco Dano's a talented player, and they get the first rounder. They had to buy the first rounder. They had to take some of Andrew Ladd's salary. I think Chicago wanted to give them a second rounder, and that's why they retained some of Andrew Ladd's salary. Why else would they have retained the salary?
I mean, it's, you know, because of the Chicago cap issues, and obviously they added Dale Weiss later, right?
Yeah.
And they add Thomas Fleischmann later. The thing is, you know, you need to have the first round in there because you need to save face. And the first round of Chicago, I mean, if this trade is a second-round pick from a bad team and a lower-end or a middle-range prospect, the fans are probably going crazy. But it's going to be the 28th, 30th, 30th, you know, 29th, 27th, 28th, 30th pick. So it's not going to be a high pick.
Yeah.
I just wonder what took so long. You had to trade him because you couldn't sign him. But if you couldn't sign him in the summer, what the heck changed?
Well, if you stopped negotiating with him at the end of December, which is what Ladd said prior to Tuesday's game, is that he hadn't had an offer from the Jets or his agents hadn't heard from the Jets since Christmas, what have you been doing for the last 2 months? You know, to your exact point, if you decide that obviously there's no middle ground to be found, or we don't want to find middle ground, and you decide that on January 1st, why has it taken until February 25th?
Well, unless they're saying, okay, we need to sign one of Byfuglien or Ladd, and we won't trade one until we have to sign. That may be their perspective. I just don't necessarily know why.
the way I look at it, I mean, you look at, I mean, I know it's a trade. It's, you know, it's at the deadline and it's a pure rental and it's great. You get a first round pick and you get
I'm not saying what they got. Yeah, I don't know anything. I haven't seen Dano play, so I can't speak to him. I'm not saying it's a bad package by any means. I'm just saying in the big picture, I'm wondering what the plan is here, guys. What is the plan of this team?
I mean, you're
going to have a lot of young guys, you know, people like Kyle Connor. There's some other young players. That's great. Calgary's got a lot of young players they like, too. So does Edmonton. So does Arizona.
Yeah.
So do a bunch of other teams. And you look at the squads in this division with big-time talent, Sagan, guys that aren't getting, you know, aren't old by any means, and guys that aren't going to be slowing down, you'd expect, you know, Ryan Johansson for a long period of time. So my question is, what are you trying to do?
I don't think it's complicated at all, Rich. I think they were trying to make the playoffs this year, and they wanted to sign both players, and they couldn't sign both players. And they want to make the playoffs next year. I don't know.
How do they make the playoffs? I mean, as of now, the roster that they currently have will not make the playoffs next year.
Well, they're still going to try to make the playoffs, right?
Well, everybody tries to make the playoffs every year. So saying try to make the playoffs, but you're absolutely right. I mean,
well, that's what a plan is it not? I mean, you don't necessarily know that a plan is going to work.
Well, I'll tell you what, if Matthew Perreault and Drew Stafford are not on the block right now, and we'll talk about this more next segment when we look at, you know, going forward.
Well, those guys aren't on the block.
Why not?
You have to have some veterans.
Why?
Okay, is it time to talk tank?
No, I would never say tank because the players don't tank. Tank is nonsense. I agree with you there.
So why would they trade those guys?
Well, because the organization needs a strategy.
Are we going to be in this situation next year?
Well, what would the strategy be by trading
If this team goes into the season next year without significant changes, they're not going to be a favorite to make the playoffs. So that's the case, and you're going to do the same dance with those two guys next year.
Well, I agree. Now they have to sign some veteran players because Andrew Ladd has been traded.
Well, if you're going to sign veteran players, then that's fine. But if you're not going to be active in the free agent market, or you're not going to make additional moves to, you know, to improve your current roster, then I think to Richie's point is, you know, what is the strategy? What's the plan going forward? I mean, I got to tell you guys, the return for Andrew Ladd, I mean, it's the same return that the Coyotes got last year for Antoine Vermette. You know, class Dahlbeck and a first round pick.
Dano's a better prospect than Dahlbeck.
Dano is a better prospect.
I haven't seen Dano. I like Dahlbeck, but I think it's probably Dano.
I haven't seen one person say Dahlbeck is a better prospect than Dano.
And I'm not saying that, because Andrew Ladd's a better player than Antoine Vermette. But I'm just saying, you know, this trade doesn't excite me. Nothing about this tells me that. You know, first of all, I don't understand why they had to make it on Thursday. You know, what was the urgency to make the trade, you know, before letting to see the market, you know, play itself out over the course of the weekend? See if, you know, another team gets desperate. See if an arms race develops. I just don't see what the, you know, if you'd said a month ago that Andrew Ladd's going to get traded to the Chicago Blackhawks.
Wouldn't have surprised me at all because also the connection with Cheveldayoff and Bowman.
Of course. And this is the exact return you would have said that the Jets are going to get.
Probably.
And so So I shrugged my shoulders.
They probably offered him around, and they were looking for a first round and a pretty good prospect. And this is probably the best prospect they were offered. And the firsts were probably pretty close in range one another. Remember, the only teams going for rentals, guys, are teams that are in big-time playoff teams.
Right. And I get that. I just don't know the – and if this trade happens on Monday, I probably look at it a little bit different because they at least went down to the wire to see what –
That doesn't bother me, Drew. This is the best offer they had, so be it. They were going to play him, then you might as well trade him because you can possibly lose him for injury. I wouldn't have played him.
I wouldn't have played him either.
Yeah. But I'm just wondering in a big picture sense where this team's going.
I think a lot of Jets fans are asking the same question. This is the fifth year of the five-year plan, and it's hard to argue that you're not back at step one.
And you listen to Kevin Cheveldayoff talk about the future and this and that. It's like, I don't know what he's talking about. Like, I honestly don't know what he's talking about. Like, where are you at now that you weren't at before? You have a lot more young players in a better system? Sure. You've been a non-playoff team for 4 or 5 years. You better have better prospects in a better system.
Mm-hmm.
You better have better young players. And don't get me wrong, they've drafted very well, and these draft picks might be utilized very well. There's other work to be done.
Yeah.
That's the active roster.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk about the active roster and what's going to happen as we're approaching Monday's trade deadline. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an IC Saturday on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN 1290.ca.
Dano. I know a lot about him. He just didn't fit the number one line role. I mean, I think he's going to be a terrific player. I know a person that knows the Slovakian. He comes to all the Tampa games. He's actually a radio guy, Gary. Igor Telecki, and when the Hawks made the move in the summer, I saw him in the fall, and he said he's been one of the better Slovak players right growing up from the time he started to play on national teams. So, you know, they're not getting a tryout. I think they're going to get a player they're going to be very happy with. And then if you pick right in the draft, you're getting an early pick. I mean, it's probably player 25 to, you know, you don't know, to maybe 30. So, you know, a deal is only good if it's good for both teams. I think this one will really, you'll see Marco Dano really flourish and develop with Winnipeg.
That's legendary coach, general manager, executive, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Scotty Bowman yesterday on HNL talking about Marco Dano and how he perceives him. As a Jets fan, should you be concerned that this is his third team within the course of a year?
Not really, Drew. I don't think. I mean, he was part of two big. I mean, you get traded for Andrew Ladd. Andrew Ladd's a proven goal scorer, and you get traded in the Brandon Saad trade. Brandon Saad's a really good player. So if he was traded for players who weren't as good, okay. But I wouldn't be too concerned about that. I mean, does it mean that he's maybe not what people expected him to be? Sure, but you can tell in what people are saying about the acquisition, he's not a first-line talent.
Mm-hmm.
So as far as I can tell, again, I haven't seen him play, but what I hear.
Yeah, exactly. So it looks like the Jets, I mean, you know, second-line talent based on, I mean, Scotty Bowman there, hopefully.
Well, Scotty Bowman is not an impartial observer.
Of course.
I wouldn't take, I mean, again, nobody knows more about the game than Scotty Bowman, but Scotty Bowman is associated with the Chicago Blackhawks and is not going to say we just traded a player we don't think we'll make it.
Yeah.
He's going to say we traded a great young player, like, which is exactly what he said.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense. And, I mean, so I think from the Jets fans' perspective, you know, as long as expectations are kept in check, that you're dealing with a young player who's going to get a 20-25-game opportunity to prove that he belongs in the NHL next season. And you look at the Jets roster next season, I think what you have, the problem that I see is, you know, you're going to obviously run with Scheifele, with Ehlers, and with Wheeler. And that's going to be your big line next season. I mean, whether or not it's an NHL first line, probably is. I can listen to that argument.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then the problem is the rest of the roster, with the exception of Brian Little, you have a mishmash of third and fourth line guys. And I think that's where you're, you know, to
well,
your
Little, Stafford, and Perreault are all guys who can play in your top group.
Yeah, they can play in your top six, but I mean Perreault and Stafford, I don't think are, if Perreault and Stafford and Little are your second line, to your point, Ezzie, I think they need more reinforcements from the free agent market to be a bona fide team next season. And I'm not sure if they're going to be active in the free agent market. I think Jets fans would hope that they are.
Yeah.
But could you also see a possibility that Kevin Shaveldayoff's not done between now and Monday's trade deadline, that other players are moved off of this active roster in an attempt to accumulate draft picks or accumulate other young assets? Or is Chevy done? What do you expect to happen between now and Monday?
I expect nothing to happen.
So you think the Jets are done for the trade deadline?
I know a lot of people want to talk about Michael Hutchinson possibly being moved. I guess that's a possibility, but I really don't think that any significant roster players are going to be moved at this point. And this is already a very young team, especially with Brian Little out of the lineup and now Andrew Ladd traded. So I don't expect there to be any significant moves. If there are any moves, I'd expect it to be depth defensemen or depth forwards or possibly Hutchinson.
Yeah, I don't expect any significant moves at all. I'm with Ezzie on that. Maybe they deal out a defenseman, or maybe Hutchinson to like a San Jose or something, but I don't expect anything significant.
As a Jets fan, tell me why I shouldn't be concerned that the team is wasting Blake Wheeler's prime.
I don't know what to say there, Drew, in terms of how long his prime will last, but you know, you're getting him on a good value deal, better than I thought it was going to be, and he's been a terrific player. Will Blake Wheeler win with the Jets during his prime? He may not. I mean, that's a fair question, Drew. That's a fair question.
Ezzie, is that something that a Jets fan should be concerned about?
I think the Jets fans should be concerned about if this team is moving in the right direction, not looking at one player and if that one player's window to win is being wasted.
And do you think the Jets are moving in that right direction?
it's tough to say. Right now, this was a disappointing season, and I think that the Jets are certainly going to need to surround their good young players with other veteran players. I think right now, as the roster is constructed, it probably wouldn't be a playoff team next year. So the Jets are going to have to go out and get another defenseman. They're going to have to get another, hopefully, top six forward or bottom six forward in free agency, because you've lost too much with Lee Stempniak and Michael Frolik. That was the main reason why the Jets have struggled this year, I think. I think the younger players weren't able to pick up the slack of guys like Stempniak and Frolik. So I do think they're heading in the right direction. I mean, you look at how Kyle Connor's doing with the University of Michigan. They have a lot of prospects. Now, do those prospects materialize into everyday NHLers in a year or 2 years? Who knows? But I think they are going in the right direction.
This coming October, so, you know, 8 months from now, will be year six for the Winnipeg Jets. It'll be year six of Kevin Cheveldayoff being the general manager of this team. Is it put up or shut up time for Kevin Cheveldayoff as Jets general manager?
Isn't it already that time?
Well, I don't know. He seems to skate on a lot. He doesn't seem to get a lot of criticism.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that needs to be that should have been a question asked already long ago now. Because how many managers, I think the average tenure for a manager is a general manager in the league is slightly over 5 years.
Okay, so we're into year six then. So he's above average.
Well, no, he's not. This is year five.
Sorry, fine. But
so once the season's complete and a little into that, then I mean, that's the average. That's when guys get called for their record. And if, and right now, you didn't get, I think we need to qualify this, they didn't get an expansion team. They got a team. You might not have loved the players, but you got some pieces. You clearly got some pieces. Bufflin, Ladd, Little, Enstrom, Kane, Bigot. That's pieces. Don't tell me that's not pieces. So it's been 5 years, and you had your successful, I mean, run to the playoffs last year. But it's been 5 years, and you haven't won a playoff game? I don't know how you're not held accountable for that.
Is he?
And with the emergence of Connor Hellebuck, for example, you've got depth in goal. I think defense, we've seen this year that the Jets desperately need a shutdown defenseman, someone on the left side to solidify the top four. But I like what I see in goal, and the Jets don't have any D prospects right now. And on forward, I mean, again, we've talked about it all year. I mean, the Jets have lacked depth and a veteran presence. But, you know, to Richie's point, I mean, after the first 5 years of the Jets being back, they haven't won a playoff game. And, you know, it's tough to say, will they make the playoffs next year? Well,
who knows right now?
Your opinion
is
your opinion, and my opinion is my opinion.
Absolutely.
And you could like the Dano for Ladd trade, and I could not like the trade.
It's not
right now, the roster's not, I mean, a playoff roster, but you don't know what they're going to do in the offseason.
It's not that I don't like the trade. It's just exactly what I would have expected, and it doesn't excite me. That was my point, you know, going back to Thursday, is it's exactly what, you know, if you're retaining this, you're retaining salary for Ladd, and you're doing the Blackhawks a favor there.
Well, whatever, who cares? That gets you better assets. You should be retaining salary.
Of course you should.
I have no issue with retaining salary. If that gets you a better return, then don't be cheap on that and make the debt. I think that's a good move.
I think that's a great move. I think the Jets, I mean, they should use the salary cap space that they have, which is the most of any team approaching Monday's trade deadline in the entire league. They have the most salary cap space. And I think that they should use that as incentive to do deals with them. No problem with retaining salary. But then you're telling me that, I mean, you're doing the Blackhawks a favor, and it's a conditional third-round pick?
No, Drew, I mean, I don't have an issue with that. I mean, the third-round pick is conditional on the cup win.
Right.
Basically, Chicago's saying, we don't care if we got a win in the cup. I don't have an issue with that and eating the salary.
No, so, I'm saying, why is it conditional? Why?
No, I know. I mean, I don't have an issue with that.
I mean, it's just that it seems like it's just such a...
Third-round pick 2018, I mean...
Yeah,
it's not overstate the value in those.
I don't think there is much value in it, and I'm just saying that you're doing the Blackhawks a favor. It just seems like it's such a generic trade. Maybe that's the word. It's just the
maybe Drew, but I'm not sure what you'd be expecting from the, like, you've seen 5 years of the organization and what's been done, and what would you expect?
I wouldn't.
Are you expecting something different?
No, I'm not. Sorry, Ez, go ahead.
I don't even think it has to do with what the organization has done. What were they going to get for Andrew Ladd? We talked about this for months. Mm-hmm. A first rounder and a prospect. Right. What did they get? A first rounder and a prospect.
That's at the deadline, though, Ezzy. That, you don't know if that would have been the case last year or
And obviously they made the playoffs last year, or in the summer. Would they have gotten more?
Right. I don't disagree with that, but we're talking about what's happened in the last week, right? I'm just focused on, sure, I agree with you, Rich. They probably might have gotten a slightly better draft pick and a slightly better prospect if it was earlier in the season. I don't know how much better. I think this is a pretty good deal considering that I think they wanted to sign Andrew Ladd before the trade deadline. I really don't think that they gave up on signing Andrew Ladd at the beginning of the season.
So you think that?
I really don't.
So no, not at the beginning of the season, but at Christmas. I mean, Andrew Ladd, I mean, maybe he's not being honest. I'd have trouble believing that he wasn't being honest on Tuesday when he said that, you know, his representatives have not heard from the Jets since Christmas. I mean, that is 6 weeks ago. That is, you know, 8 weeks ago. So if the Jets decided that they weren't going to continue contract negotiations at that point in time, why did they wait until February 25th to make the trade?
And I can't answer that. Rich can't answer that.
Of
you
course,
can't.
I know.
So, I mean, I don't know if there's a point in trying to answer that. I mean, we can only go on what happened. And I think that the return that they got based on when it happened was pretty good. And I'm not saying that Mark O'Dano is going to replace Andrew Ladd. Andrew Ladd's the captain. He led the team in scoring last year. I mean, this is a guy who's got two Stanley Cups. He's not going to replace Andrew Ladd. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they get a first-round pick. Who knows what that first-round pick is going to be? The Jets might trade that first-round pick to get a higher first-round pick.
Sure.
It's possible. They might trade that first-round pick to get a player. Who knows? As part of a package. We don't know. But you have to look at it for what it is. And I don't know if they would have got anything better, you know, today or tomorrow leading up to the trade deadline. I agree with you guys. If you weren't going to sign Andrew Ladd, you should have traded him back in September or October. I'm not going to disagree. Why did the Jets do that? The only answer I can come up with is they thought that they could sign him. They wanted to sign him.
Yeah, I agree that they wanted to sign him. And they obviously weren't able to come to agreement with him. We'll see. You know, like you said, it's too soon to give a grade on a trade when it involves basically a prospect and a first round pick. I'm just not as effusive in praise as a lot of other people have been. But everybody's got their own opinion, and they're entitled to their own opinion. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll start with our division by division, team by team look at the Central Division. The Stars, the Blackhawks, and the Blues are atop the division. We'll talk about those teams next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Curve Crew are back. It's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're on TSN 1290. This segment is brought to you by the 44th annual Rady JCC Sports Dinner, featuring keynote speaker and Pro Football Hall of Famer Dan Marino. The dinner is coming up on Tuesday, June the 21st, and will also honor former Chicago Bears player and University of Manitoba Bison's product, Israel Adonijé. To purchase tickets, visit radyjcc.com or call 204-477-7513 for more information. The Rady JCC's 44th annual sports dinner, always a great dinner. Generally speaking, Ezzy and I go together, so we have a nice little date night there when we do that. You know, are you available on that day there, Ez?
Yeah, let me check my schedule.
It's clear.
Yeah, it's clear.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, good. I'll go with you. We've gone before, and I think we saw Joe Montana?
Yeah, I think that sounds...
No, Mark Messier.
Mark Messier? Was it Mess? I can't remember.
Yeah. And Magic.
And Magic, yes. We did see Magic. Anyways, Dan Marino at the Rady JCC Sports Dinner coming up in June. Let's go division by division, team by team. We start with the Central Division.
This is the Central Division.
Start with the Chicago Blackhawks. That was producer Rory, who was kind enough to produce us some division
Rory,
stingers there.
I was going to say, that was a pretty sexy, manly voice.
Yeah, that was producer Rory.
Thank you, Ezzy.
You know, it was a sweet, dulcet tones of producer Rory coming in to help us out with those. Chicago Blackhawks. So in addition to picking up Andrew Ladd on Thursday, they also acquire yesterday Christian Ehrhoff from the Los Angeles Kings, and then in the more significant of the deals, Dale Weiss and Thomas Fleischmann from the Montreal Canadiens. In exchange, the players they ship out, Mark O'Dano, of course we mentioned, 2016 first-round pick, the conditional third-round pick, defenseman Rob Scuderi, who they had acquired earlier in the year from Pittsburgh. He'd been buried in the minors. A 2018 second-round pick, and Philip Deneau. So the Blackhawks obviously sort of loading up for another cup run. Are they now your cup favorite? Were they your cup favorite before?
I still think Washington's the cup favorite, but I think that Chicago's moved itself up to probably second on that list. I mean, you have the Erhoff Scuderi, and that's not a very significant move in the sense that, you know, both guys are past their primes, okay? Mm-hmm. So Scuderi goes back to L.A. where he can be a player that can, if he does play there at all. His lack of mobility is less of an issue playing Chicago than it is in L.A. than it is in Chicago. And Erhoff's defensive prowess, or lack thereof, is, I think, an issue, but less of an issue maybe in Chicago, when his skating ability and his ability to move the puck is helpful. But again, that's a minor trait. Then you get in, obviously, you have Ladd, who's going to play alongside Jonathan Taves and Marian Hossa when he's back. Allows Andrew Shaw to drop down. Shaw can drop down, and then you have Weiss there. So you have Ladd complimenting up front now. Then you have Dale Weiss coming in. Fleischman is a skilled player. I mean, you saw him in Anaheim last year. A guy who can make some plays, but he's, you know, certainly not consistent. So you've just added more talent to your roster. You've become a better team. You improve your depth on the back end. I still think they're going to want to add another defenseman.
Yeah, and it'll probably be a depth defenseman, Richie, because they don't have the cap space. If you look at their cap space right now, I think they have $100,000.
$655,000 is what they are projected to have in cap space on Monday's deadline day, on deadline day on Monday.
Okay, I might be looking at a different source, but nonetheless, their top nine right now is the best in the NHL. You want to go over their top nine for a second, Drew?
Please.
Their top nine is Jonathan Taves, Patrick Kane, Marian Hossa, Artemi Panarin, Artem Anisimov, Andrew Ladd, Dale Weiss, Teuvo Teravainen. That's a pretty darn good top nine. I think I might have missed one.
I think
one
that was
guy.
Only eight guys,
well,
though.
Well, throw in Thomas Fleischman there, or Andrew Shaw.
Shaw
I would put in there as well. He's usually on the second or third line, if not on the first line, but he's better suited, as Richie mentioned, to be on one of those bottom lines. Fleischman, not a huge fan of. I think if you're going to really depend on him on your top six, you know, he's probably going to disappoint you. But as Richie mentioned, he's probably going to be on the third or fourth line once it comes around to the playoffs. And, you know, as far as Dale Weiss goes, we know how much we love Dale Weiss. He was a great player for the Montreal Canadiens. He can fight. He kind of replaces Ryan Garbutt on the Chicago Blackhawks, but he has more of a scoring touch than Ryan Garbutt. So I love that trade. You know, speaking of the Andrew Ladd trade, from the Chicago perspective, it makes so much sense. You know, a guy that has won a Stanley Cup in 2010 with Chicago, but also just adds another depth element, another scoring element, more grit to this team. I mean, the Chicago Blackhawks, I think, are the favorite. I'm not saying that the Washington Capitals aren't going to win the Stanley Cup. I'm just saying they're naturally the Stanley Cup favorite because they're the defending Stanley Cup champions, I think. And not only just that, the way they've played this year. I mean, they've been at the top of the Western Conference standings for most of the year with the Dallas Stars. And these players just make them better. I like the moves that Stan Bowman has made, and he hasn't really given up too much of the future. I mean, Marco Dano, they didn't want to give up necessarily, but that's what you have to give up if you want to get a player like Andrew Ladd, right? So
when you bring in Panarin, as you're allowed to trade some younger players, right?
And they've got some young players. They don't have the best prospect system in the NHL, but who cares? They're trying to win the Stanley Cup.
Sure.
I mean, this team is constructed to win the Stanley Cup for several years, and they've signed players long term. Panarin is going to be an RFA after next season. So, I mean, you're going to have some difficulty signing certain players. They probably want to get rid of Brian Bickle. That's probably another player that could move before the trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, if you get rid of Bickle, then you certainly are going to clear up even more cap space entering into Monday. So,
And they've been trying to move Bickle for a year now, Drew.
Sure. Well, so it's just, I mean, it's that
he makes a lot of money.
It's that bad of a contract.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you're going to – that contract hasn't worked out. But remember when they signed him after that tremendous playoff year, right?
Exactly right. So Chicago Blackhawks obviously loading up to go to the Stanley Cup. The Dallas Stars currently lead the Central Division, though. We saw Dallas twice in the last two games, Tuesday night here in Winnipeg, Thursday night in Dallas, where their defensive woes and their goaltending woes in particular really stood out more than anything. How concerned are you right now as a Dallas Stars fan? You're leading the Central Division. Is that goaltending, is that defense not good enough to get you to the promised land? Do you think that they try and address that come Monday?
Well, their goaltending they're not going to address really because they already have two guys at big tickets. So I think their defense will they address. I don't think Jim Neal thinks this is the year necessarily. I think that he would make a move if it made sense on the back end. I don't think he's going to sell the farm to add a defenseman.
Yeah, and they've got some interesting UFAs. Goligoski and Demers are pending UFAs. A guy like Julius Honka has been good in the AHL, but he's at least a year away. I agree with Rich. I don't think the Dallas Stars are going after necessarily a big-name defenseman. We talked about a guy like Dan Hamhuis potentially being a good fit on this Dallas Stars team. Mm-hmm. I still think Hamhuis would look good on the Stars team. I don't know.
The Blackhawks were supposedly also interested in Hamhuis.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, you mentioned Dallas is leading the division. They're only 1 point up on Chicago.
Sure.
So, I mean, the Chicago Blackhawks and Stars are going to battle it out for the Western Conference title for the rest of the season. But I agree with Richie in the sense that don't expect there to be a huge move. And even though the Dallas Stars got whooped by the Jets on Thursday night, mm-hmm. and I think a lot of that had to do with the Jets really, I think, getting rid of all those frustrations of losing to the Dallas Stars three times before that, and also kind of playing, in a sense, for Andrew Ladd and the fact that he wasn't there. But I still think this Dallas Stars team is good enough to beat many teams in a playoff series. Mm-hmm. The defense isn't as good as Chicago's. It's not as good as St. Louis's. It's probably third or fourth best in their own division.
That's true. Yeah, after Nashville,
but
too.
They have Jamie Benn. They have Tyler Seguin. They have Jason Spezza. They have Valeri Nichushkin. They have Cody Eakin. I mean, this is a deep, deep team on forward. Patrick Sharp,
sure.
I didn't even mention. I mean, they're a very deep team, and you have guys like Antoine Roussel who provide grit, Vernon Fiddler, these type of guys. It's a good enough team that even though their defense would be maybe you'd consider mediocre, and John Klingberg is clearly their best defenseman, but they've got the experience with Johnny Oduya. Goligoski and Demers are good defensemen. I think it's really you're looking at, Richie, probably a bottom six guy that you want to add. Or if you're adding Dan Hamhuis, he's probably a guy that would play in your second pair, and you'd move
Seabrook,
another guy,
yeah.
bumping out a guy like Jordy Benn or Yuri Yokopaka or something
Dallas,
like that. Sorry. They're just low. They have less depth the farther you go down the D pairings. So
tell me why the Dallas Stars this season, just this year, because who knows what's going to happen in the future. Tell me why the Dallas Stars this year aren't the Washington Capitals of 5 years ago.
That's a fair point, Drew. I mean, I think the one thing is that they do have a goaltender who has won the cup.
In the Emmy.
I think they have. I just think they're. They don't have the. I think the Capitals had struggles for many years because they couldn't get out of their own way. I'm not sure Dallas has that. I don't think Dallas is good enough defensively. But so I see your point in terms of Washington.
Mm-hmm.
But Dallas had a really good year. I wouldn't want to play them in the playoffs because they can open it up and dominate you offensively. But it's obviously fair points about their defense. I just don't think they're going to trade young players or high draft picks, to fill the defense this year because I don't think Jim Neal is probably thinking, I'd probably take my chances with the squad right now than sell young prospects and take my chances with a slightly better team.
And some of those young prospects that have been bandied about, Radek Faxa, 2012 first
sure.
overall pick,
mm-hmm.
Brett Ritchie, guys like this, these guys have kind of come up slowly through the AHL system. And do you want to trade those guys, get a defenseman that's not really a one or two defenseman, who's maybe a three or four? For example, Dan Hamhuis, I think those two players would be good examples of probably what Vancouver would be wanting in return. And if they're not giving up prospects, they're going to want a roster player, right? So they're going to want somebody in return, you know,
right.
whether that's Antoine Roussel or kind of a third or fourth line or something like that. But if you are going for it, then I think this defense, as compared to a Chicago, as compared to a Washington, and Washington's defense,
they've improved significantly since the days when they were just an offensively inclined team.
And, Drew, they weren't losing without Brooks Orpik. Now Brooks Orpik's back. Mm-hmm. They added Mike Weber. We'll get into that more when
we get
into the Eastern Conference. But
yeah.
There's other top teams who have stronger defenses than Dallas. Not saying that it's the worst defense in the NHL, but I think especially when you get down to kind of the five and six defensemen and you compare that to Chicago with guys like Van Riemsdyk and Ehrhoff now, you know, they could probably stand to make a trade. But Rich is right. Maybe they're looking at it and they're saying, okay, we have a good team, but Chicago's still really good. They're probably going to beat us. So let's not mortgage the future just to possibly have the chance of getting to the second or third round.
You know, if you look at the first round matchup, as you're getting to Chicago, that's your next step, right? But he probably thinks, Jim, no, if they end up playing St. Louis in the first round, he thinks they're pretty good shot.
Sure.
And they end up playing one of the teams in the
Colorado
bottom of the,
right
yeah.
now. Colorado would be the team they would play if the playoffs started today.
So, yeah, you're going to beat Colorado. my opinion. So then you're looking at, okay, maybe you play Chicago, maybe you play him later, and maybe you take your chances.
Sure.
You know, I don't like that matchup for Dallas, actually, but I
long way before that's going to definitely be the matchup. Right. St. Louis Blues, the other team I want to touch on in this segment. The Blues went out and acquired Anders Nielsen earlier this morning. He's a former goaltender with the Oilers. They gave up a minor league goaltender named Nicklas Lidström and a 2017 fifth-round pick. The Blues had lost Brian Elliott, I believe, for the next 6 to 8 weeks, if I'm not mistaken. So that is really why they needed to go out and get a backup goaltender. You know, this Blues team has not been healthy at all this year.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to say if they're going to be healthy entering into the playoffs. That's probably the best-case scenario for Doug Armstrong and Ken Hitchcock. Is this Blues team going to be active at the deadline? They just freed up a little bit of cap space by having, you know, they have a little over $3 million to work with ahead of Monday.
They're interesting, Drew. I don't know what they do. You mentioned they've had injuries all along now. Having Jaden Schwartz back is a huge addition. Obviously, mm-hmm. Pietrangelo is out. And I still think the question is...
And they lost Alex Steen as well. He's out of the lineup, too.
And I think goaltending is my concern. And people are, Jake Allen, he's good. I haven't seen it yet, so I don't know for sure if he's the guy. By today's move, you'd think they're probably not going to add another goaltender. I'm not sold on Brian Elliott either. So if you look at the back end, I mean, if they're healthy, it's a big if. I don't think they need much help there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're looking maybe on the left side, you want to add one more guy. But then if you're looking up front, you mentioned Steen, Drew, and the rest of their guys, I mean, they're pretty deep. This is kind of the way they've been going all along. They've always chosen this path. You know, the depth, kind of 1 through 12, really good forward group, solid defense, and questionable goaltending. And it doesn't seem like Doug Armstrong or Ken Hitchcock here, and specifically Doug Armstrong, is changing his plan. So I'm not sure how many moves they make coming up here.
Yeah, Richie, Doug Armstrong has been very unpredictable in years past. And if I'm Doug Armstrong, I have to be very concerned about all of these injuries. And I think we haven't talked about this a lot over the last couple of weeks. I think we talked about it earlier in the season. There's a pending RFA after next season and a pending UFA after this season that I think could have the potential to be moved. That's David Backes and Kevin Shattenkirk. And you hear that they don't think that they're going to re-sign Kevin Shattenkirk after next year because he's got 1 year left on his contract after next year. But David Backes, I mean, you talk about Eric Staal. I mean, same situation with David Backes. He's the captain. You know, he's slowed down a little bit. He's 31, 32 years old now. And his offensive numbers have declined a little bit. Do the St. Louis Blues say, look it, we've had too many injuries this year, and we want to re-sign Kevin Shattenkirk? I think the St. Louis Blues should re-sign Kevin Shattenkirk. He's a top offensive defenseman in the NHL. But again, is he a $7 million defenseman or is he a $6 million defenseman? Then they have the same problem with Buff, right? Do they want to pay him that much money for 5 or 6 years? So I think there's a good chance David Backes has moved.
Really?
But I don't, he's a pending UFA.
I think they're going to just ride it out. Backes is interesting, though, Ezzy, because I think you mentioned Shattenkirk. I agree with you in terms of I think Shattenkirk gets the big money. I think he's worth it just because of how much offense he brings and how smart he is and how good he is in the power play. Backes is an interesting one because, in my opinion, David Backes has slowed down. And you only need one team to pay him. But I think St. Louis is probably thinking, we'll keep him. We don't think he may, I'm just guessing, we don't think he's a player he was before. We're hoping we'll keep him. We'll try and make a run with this core again. And in the offseason, we'll see if other teams have made the same analysis of him as we do, and maybe we can sign him at a cheaper rate.
Yeah, no team probably in the NHL is as concerned with their first round matchup as the Blues are.
Absolutely.
The Blues have to avoid the Chicago Blackhawks.
They do. You're right.
Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll look at the three teams in the Central Division that are tweeners. Are they in? Are they out? The Wild, the Avs, and the Predators. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, trade deadline preview show on TSN 1290.
On the Curve, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Ten minutes before the top of the hour, you're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, trade deadline preview show. This segment brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys has become known as one of the world's best jersey customizers If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want customized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Gentlemen, we continue with our look at the Central Division. Right now, we've talked about the top three teams. In the first wildcard spot are the Nashville Predators. They're 8 points behind the St. Louis Blues, so it's pretty clear that Nashville, Colorado, and Minnesota are all, those three teams are battling for the two wildcard spots. You know, the Predators, do you expect them to be active at all entering into Monday and the trade deadline? Or is this a team that realizes that this isn't their year and there's no point in, they've already made their big move with acquiring Ryan Johansson?
Well, Nashville's interesting, guys, because Nashville in the past has been fairly active at the trade deadline, and going back to, you know, the Peter Forsberg acquisition, which I believe was right at the trade deadline. Maybe it was a little bit before.
Yeah, no, I think it was at the trade deadline.
But,
yeah.
You know, for example, that one was a blockbuster. That one was quite a few years ago. But you look at this Predators team, and I don't know, Drew, necessarily that they view themselves as not having a chance to compete. If you look at the Predators, well, they have the goaltending. Pekka Rinne's maybe not been as good as he was last year or in previous years, but you've still got an amazing defense. And now you've got Ryan Johansson as your top center. And I think that's the key. And you look at what happened last year, guys. The Nashville Predators gave the Chicago Blackhawks a good run for their money.
Sure,
you remember, the Chicago Blackhawks, I mean, they kind of limped out of that series. And for me, after Chicago got out of the first round, it was on. Yeah. I think Chicago just kept getting better and better. But I think the Nashville Predators, you could argue, gave the Chicago Blackhawks the hardest time. And why is that? Well, the Predators are a very hard team to play against. I mean, the Winnipeg Jets know that. The Predators whooped them 7-0 earlier in the season. I believe that was back in November. And this Predators team, it's very deep. That's why they could trade a guy like Seth Jones. And, you know, you look at this team now and you say, well, what could they use? And it's really depth forwards, Richie. So for me, if the Nashville Predators are going to make a move, it's going to be to acquire a guy that they can plug in on the third or fourth line. But they're pretty set there in the top six. And, you know, they've had trouble scoring goals as of late. But this Predators team, I think, still believes, I think, and we'd have to ask, you know, David Poile, and we'd have to ask Peter Laviolette, and, you know, maybe someone who covers the team, Adam Vingan, if they really think that they can, you know, win. But I look at it, and if I'm the Nashville Predators, why can't I be the LA Kings in 2012? Like, why can't I beat the Chicago Blackhawks in the first round? You were pretty successful against them last year, you know, taking it to, was it six or seven games?
Six games.
Yeah, it was six games.
A number of those games were overtime games.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, they were tight games, so why can't you upset a team like Chicago? Once you get out of the first round, who knows what can happen? Pekka Rinne gets hot. By the way, I don't think Nashville is going to beat Chicago in the first round. Let me be clear about that. But I'm just saying that I wouldn't expect Chicago to sweep Nashville, or I wouldn't expect Dallas to sweep Nashville in the first round, because the Predators are a very good team, well coached. You know, they've got Phil Housley there, who's done an excellent job with some of the young defensemen like Matthias Ekholm and guys like that. So this Predators team, I wouldn't expect to make a blockbuster, but, you know, they have been known to bring in big names at the deadline before.
You have to wonder if Colin Wilson's on the block.
Had a bad year this year. He's definitely down year after last year's success.
And he, you know, and he's a guy they had higher expectations for. Mm-hmm. So a 3.9 cap it for the next 3 years after this one. That would be somebody I think might be out there and available. And you wonder if they would move him. Would they move him for another forward, or would they try and, you know, their bottom pairing with Granberg and Boteto, is that something that they'd want to shore up? I don't know a lot about those guys, so I don't want to say
they
that
they just re-signed Boteto, actually.
They did, yeah.
Two-year contract.
But I'm not sure if that's something they want to solidify, because you know, Barrett Jackman certainly isn't the player that he once was. That's something they want to solidify the back end, because Seth Jones is not there? Or do they want to maybe add another forward up there? I'm not sure, but I don't see a massive move out of Nashville.
Heading over to Colorado, a team that has already made a small deal earlier this week. They acquired Sean Matthias from the Toronto Maple Leafs.
I like that acquisition.
In exchange for Colin Smith and a 2016 fourth-round pick. You know, the Avalanche, I'm assuming that you guys would agree with me that they're in the market for bottom six forwards and defense.
Well, and I mean, if they could, guys, they would try to get someone. If they get more aggressive, they could maybe go for a top four defenseman or a top six forward. I think the Colorado Avalanche are in a bit of a precarious spot because Jerome Iginla said earlier this week that he's not waiving his no-trade clause. Alex Tanguay has had a poor year, so I don't think he has much value. Richie, he's a pending UFA, like Alex Tanguay, but this is probably his last year in the NHL, if not second last year.
Somebody yesterday said that he could have played in the alumni game between the Avs and the Red Wings.
I watched that. Do you guys watch that game?
I watched bits and pieces of it.
I was feeling well yesterday, so I watched a bit of that game. First of all, it was amazing.
Yeah.
This is a quick tangent. But second of all, it was pretty competitive. I don't think people realized yesterday how competitive that alumni game was.
I mean, those guys, when you have that many wars, because, I mean, those were wars between the Red Wings and the Avs. I mean, when you have that many battles, even though it's an alumni game, there's still pride, and there's still it's hard to turn it off completely.
I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
Who are you, Drew? Adrian Dater?
Adrian knows way more about that the Avs and the Red Wings series than I ever would. But it was an interesting watch. I would agree with you there. So the Avs that's the problem. The Avs, the Preds, the Wild, they're right on that cusp. They're not completely in. They're not completely out.
I think it's Ben. You guys talk about Tanguay. So, I mean, they're benefited right now by the fact that they're in the playoffs. So they don't have to trade those guys.
Sure.
And yeah, I would agree with your assessment, Drew. Before depth forwards, you see Matthias being one of them,
mm-hmm.
and then a defenseman if you could do that as well. But again, you're not mortgaging the future here for any moves.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rich. Varlamov's their number one goalie, obviously, and he's going to have to, if the Colorado Avalanche make the playoffs, he will have to steal a series for
absolutely.
Them. Because the Colorado Avalanche just aren't as deep as the Stars or the Hawks or the Blues or the Kings. I mean, they really are a team that when you compare them to the top dogs of the West, they just don't match up. But Sean Matthias is a guy. If you remember, he was originally on Florida,
mm-hmm.
then he went to Vancouver. Guy that I've always liked, he's not a 70-point guy. He's like a 30, 40-point guy, but he's got speed. He was actually, I thought, one of the best players for the Toronto Maple Leafs this year.
We don't have any players.
That's damning with faint praise if there was ever a comment.
But I like that, you know, Matthias. He's a guy that most likely you're going to put on the third line there with a guy like Carl Soderberg and Blake Como. But you look at that defense and, you know, you talk about, for example, a Dan Hamhuis. A Dan Hamhuis would look good on Colorado. But again, who are they giving up? They've got a lot of good prospects. JT Compher is one of the guys that is playing with Kyle Connor right now. Do they want to move a guy like that to maybe get a top four defenseman? Probably not.
Yeah.
But that's what you're going to have to give up.
If it was, as long as it wasn't a rental, they would never do that for a rental at this
right.
point.
And again, you know, Richie talks about Nashville or St. Louis and whether they really believe that, or Dallas even, if they really think they're going to be able to win the Stanley Cup this year, if you're Joe Sakic, you're probably looking at your team and you're saying, okay, I mean, you know, it's great that we made the playoffs, but are we really going to beat Chicago LA if we get past the first round? Or most likely they don't get out of the first round. But
Stars and Avalanche would be a hell of a first-round series.
It'd be a lot of goals, that's for sure.
There would be.
I think the best trade acquisition for them would be just to sign Joe Sakic. He looked pretty good yesterday.
You know, with Stevie Yzerman and all those guys, it's nice to see him back on the ice. Minnesota Wild, they obviously made the coaching change, dismissing Mike Yeo. A number of weeks ago, they went on a hot streak. Well, reality has caught up with
reality's
them. They've lost.
Back, yeah.
They've lost three games in a row now. The Wild are 4 points behind the Avs for the final wild card spot. This Wild team is, I mean, their defense is good. Their forward group is getting old. They're an interesting team. I don't think they're going to be active necessarily on Monday, but this is a team to watch going forward.
Well, the one thing I'll say about that is before you get in, is Chuck Fletcher's job on the line here?
Sure.
And does that affect what he does?
I'm just shocked, Rich, that the Minnesota Wild have not made any moves aside from firing Mike Yeo, because I like Mike Yeo. I've been on the record before as saying that I like him as a head coach. I thought he was a really good assistant with Pittsburgh. I think this Minnesota Wild team, we've talked about it. They talked about it last week when we were gone, Matt, Dave, and Sean. This is a flawed team. Rich mentioned it a couple weeks ago. It's a slow team. They rely too much on their veterans. I don't think Chuck Fletcher did enough in the offseason or during the season to address their weaknesses. I mean, you look at the Wild, and they have the makings. The core is there, whether that's, you know, you want to look just at the forwards or defense, or, you know, Zach Parise, Ryan Suter. Nino Niederreiter had a really nice goal last night. But this isn't a team that I think is going to scare anybody in the playoffs. I think you got to be a seller. If you're Chuck Fletcher, you got to sell some pieces. You got to move whoever you can.
If he sells, he's probably going to get fired, is he? I don't know if he's going to do that.
I don't know if you move, you know, I'm not talking about moving Thomas Vanek or Jason Pominville, but you hear that the Wild were interested in Jonathan Drouin earlier in the season.
I don't think Pominville's contract is tradable. Vanek maybe with 1 year, but I don't know who would want him. This is the thing. Luckily for them, they're only 4 points back of Colorado team, which I think that, you know, on paper, they're probably still better than or close to, certainly arguable in terms of who's the better team. So
I think Chuck Fletcher's going to try and make a run at that pick and at that spot. And then the question is, will he still be the GM at the end of the year if, frankly, if they don't make it or if they lose in the first round? So I think he probably looks to add a player or two at the deadline.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the Pacific Division. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's our trade deadline preview show on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Second hour of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show this Saturday morning. It's our trade deadline preview show. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. Richie, you wanted to clarify something about the Minnesota Wild.
Yeah, I just said they're going to add a player or two. I want to be more specific than that. I don't think people listen to the show to hear a player or two. I would expect it doesn't appear Jason Zucker is going to be out too much longer, which would help them, obviously, on the wings there, shooting winger. So I would think that the Minnesota Wild would like to add a third-line center, a guy who can create a little bit for his teammates and allow them to push a guy like Eric Halla down and improve the speed on the fourth line. So that's what I would expect. Probably a modest playmaking center.
Mm-hmm. We move our attention to the Pacific Division, which has quickly become one of the more fascinating divisions in the league. The Anaheim Ducks, absolutely on fire since Christmas. The best team in the NHL since Christmas.
Nice to see. Remember all the talk about Boudreaux?
Yeah, well, I admit that I'm surprised to see them turn it around in the manner in which they have. The Los Angeles Kings, who used to have a sizable lead in that division, it's down to 2 points. We'll start with the Kings, as we're going to go in order based on standings. So the Kings, they made a small trade earlier yesterday, acquiring Rob Scuderi in exchange for Christian Ehrhoff. Probably hoping that Scuderi, you know, maybe catches lightning in a bottle.
Well, no, I don't think it's even that. It's like they fit into the system better. I mean, they've had him there before. They know what they're getting.
Sure.
Does he play? I don't even know. Does he even play? Does he play much?
I don't know.
We'll see.
The Kings, though, you know, atop that division, and, you know, had been playing very well going into it. They have a little more than $2 million in cap space entering into Monday.
Yeah.
They see what the Blackhawks do. They probably figure the Blackhawks are, and the Ducks now, to some extent, certainly, are their chief competition in the Western Conference. Do the Kings now get into the arms race to see if they can add players to their roster? A lot of talk that they might be interested in Teddy Purcell out of Edmonton.
Yeah, former King.
Former King, yes.
So, you know, I mean, you have injuries there to deal with, right? You have Gabrick out, and that's a big one. You know, Kopitar's been nursing a bad back. He should be okay. So you look at it and you say, what Chicago's done, Anaheim's run, you need to make a move. And you mentioned Teddy Purcell. He had been there before. Teddy Purcell's not a great skater, not great on the boards, has skill, can shoot the puck. He would add a skilled element to that squad. I think that they would like to get – I always think they want to add a little bit of speed because they don't have a lot of it.
Sure.
But Teddy Purcell's not going to be that guy. You heard maybe Michael Bodker. I expect the Kings to – add a top nine forward.
Yeah, I would agree with that, Richie. Yeah. You mentioned earlier that, you know, how much is a guy like Rob Scuderi going to play? Well, he's really injury insurance, right? I would expect him to play a similar role to Kimmo Timonen, for example, in Chicago. And he's a guy that, if he does play in the playoffs and, you know, for the rest of the regular season, it's going to be kind of 10 to 15 minutes at most. But he's a guy that they obviously have experience, they have familiarity with. He's got the experience with L.A. But, yeah, Richie, you're right. I mean, L.A. is a team that's had a very underrated regular season. Sure, they've fallen off a little bit, and Anaheim's been red hot. What does Anaheim have, 8 wins in a row or something right now?
Best team since Christmas. They're only 2 points behind the Kings, which we mentioned.
Which is remarkable, and Ryan Getzlaff had a horrible start to the season. Now he's almost at a point per game. He scored a beautiful goal last night. Anaheim won in overtime. Ricard Raquel got a really nice,
beautiful goal.
Really nice goal. But so, is it going to be a guy like Mikael Bodker? is Mikael Boedker going to be a rental? Who are they going to have to give up for a guy like Mikael Boedker? Teddy Purcell, I think teams will have interest in because Edmonton is going to try to aggressively move him. I think they've already tried to aggressively move him, and Bob McKenzie of TSN reported that both Purcell and Schultz should be moved before the trade deadline.
Well, you saw McClellan go off on both of them without naming names after that game.
Well, they just they don't factor in, Richie, to the long-term plan, right? I mean, we know who factors into the long-term plan. It's guys like Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl. And
that might be it, by the way. Right? Like, you don't know what they're going
to
do.
Well, we'll get to Edmonton in a bit here. I don't know if it's going to be this segment or next segment. But, you know, Ryan Nugent-Hopkins might be on the trade block. Mm-hmm. I mean, even though he's injured right now, I mean, Evander Kane was moved while he was injured last year, so it's not impossible that a guy that's injured gets moved. I don't think Eberle's going to get moved because he's just been so good with Connor McDavid. I don't think they're going to move everybody. I think they're going to move, if they move a big name, Rich, like...
Back to the Kings. Talk about the Oilers next segment.
I got distracted there.
That's
but
okay.
No, this King team...
That dog has a puffy tail.
It's very deep, but they could probably use another speedy guy.
Top nine skating scoring winger. Okay, so Boedker does fit into that.
Mm-hmm.
I think Purcell fits into that in the skating aspect, but he fits into it in the scoring aspect. If you're worried about his compete level and all that stuff in Edmonton, I'm not so sure that's the kind of guy you want to bring in. Remember when they acquired Andre Sekera last year? It was all about how competitive he was, how he played hard and all that stuff. L.A. when they brought him in. So I'm not sure he would be the guy necessarily.
But L.A. knows what they're getting if they do acquire him, and they probably figure that, you know, bring him into this dressing room, this solid dressing room, we can turn him into into the kind of guy we need.
Maybe. I just think that there are players that would better fit their needs.
Well, fair enough. Also worth noting that, and this Elliot Friedman mentioned this in his column earlier this week, after the regular season ends, after game 82, there is no salary cap.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, which is what the Blackhawks were able to do last year with Patrick Kane on IR right up until the playoffs started. There, you know, that they were able to acquire guys and then bring Kane off the IR, and they didn't have to worry about cap manipulation and everything else. So once the regular season is over, there is no salary cap for the playoffs. So the Kings are probably looking at that Marian Gaborik injury, and they might be saying to themselves,
that's a fair point, Drew.
You're going to stay out of the lineup until the playoffs start, and then we can exploit this loophole, and we can have more than our, you know, the salary cap allows.
Yeah, they're 2.1 on caps based on deadline day, and they're not even close to the 50 contract number. So they have a lot of room there to make a move. Not a lot, but they have room to make it.
Sure. Richie, we should mention this. I mean, people forget this, I think, sometimes with the Kings. I think the Kings are going to go into the playoffs as a bit of a sleeping giant. They acquired Vinny LeCavalier and Luke Shen earlier, and we expect LeCavalier to retire, and Luke Shen is a pending UFA. But that was a significant move for the Kings when you consider they were up against the salary cap. Like, I think Dean Lombardi deserves a lot of credit for what he's done
here.
He's
a great GM.
He is a great GM. I think with the exception of maybe Ken Holland, he's the best GM in the NHL. And what he's done, like, Luke Shen, okay, you could say, you know, he's a five or six. But they needed a five or six
because
Erhoff was not filling the void left by Voinov.
Sure.
And then LeCavalier, you could say, okay, well, LeCavalier is a third or fourth line player right now, probably fourth line. But the reality is, in the playoffs, having a guy like LeCavalier, who's won a Stanley Cup, if he ends up chipping in 2 goals and 5 points in the playoffs and they get to the finals, I mean, that was worth it, right? So the Kings, I think, have made moves already. And regardless if they make, you know, one or two moves or zero moves before the trade deadline, I think this is a team that's set up really nicely. Jonathan Quick's had a really good year, an underrated year. So I think this Kings team doesn't need to do much.
Let's move down, or I guess up the coast to Anaheim, where the Ducks are now, as we mentioned, the hottest team in the NHL since Christmas, 2 points behind the Los Angeles Kings. So after that really rough start to the season, all is hunky-dory in Anaheim. What do you see them going out to do ahead of the trade deadline coming up on Monday?
I find them to be a really interesting one, Drew, in terms of what they're going to do and what they're going to look to add. And when you look at the way that their roster is and how they're getting production now and their guys are kind of rolling, you know who their top two guys centers are going to be. Is it something where you want to add a player to your third line, your depth line, or do you want to add another scoring winger? Like, I look at their wingers, and I could see a top six winger making a lot of sense there. I really could.
Which is why there was talk that Andrew Ladd may have been a fit in Anaheim.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be beside a guy like Getzlaff, and I know they've made the move Hagelin for Perron, and Perron gives him more scoring touch than Hagelin does. But this is kind of a similar team to LA in the sense that They're big, not the quickest team, and maybe they want to add a quick winger who has a little bit of a scoring touch. So I think that LA and Anaheim may have the same need, and you wonder if they're going to be bidding on the same players.
And when you say winger with a scoring touch, doesn't Jonathan Drouin come to mind? And again, I'm not a fan of Jonathan Drouin. Richie, earlier in the season, me and you were arguing about what Jonathan Drouin could get. But you also look at the Anaheim Ducks, and this has been talked about quite a bit on TSN Trade Center with Bob McKenzie and Drager and LeBrun and others. The Anaheim Ducks are flush with good young defensemen. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a very low chance, I would say 0% chance, Lindholm gets moved or Fowler gets moved. I would look at Sammy Vatanen, even though I really like Sammy Vatanen. But the emergence of Shea Theodore this year, he's been really good for them. So is Josh Manson. Mm-hmm. I mean, this Ducks team, I think, is going for it. I mean, I think we'd all agree the Ducks are buyers. Mm-hmm. The Ducks are absolute buyers.
And they got a lot of cap space.
They've got a lot of cap space.
Not an issue. Not an issue.
So Bob Murray, Drew, is he going to go after a big guy? And I think Jonathan Drouin, former third overall pick, that would be a good one. So what would Tampa Bay want? Well, Tampa Bay, and I realize they just signed Braden Coburn. Wouldn't a team like Tampa Bay love a guy like Sammy Vatanen on their blue line heading into the playoffs? I'm just throwing it out there. I'm not saying it's going to happen, but something like that. I could see the Ducks maybe
That's
throwing.
Not a bad thought. I just wonder, like, I've always thought the Ducks still need a top D. The reason I'm not pointing that out to be something that they acquire is that I think they would have acquired it by now, and I think they're going to look to add a winger. And I think Ezzie has some good points there with the emergence of a guy like Theodore and you have a lot of players. You have a lot of defensemen on that back end. I'm not sure if it's more quantity over quality, and I like Lindholm. You guys know that.
Yep.
He's a really good player. I like Vatanen. I think Fowler doesn't get enough credit. I think sometimes he's criticized. But, I mean, Stoner, Bieksa, Dupre, these guys are limited in many ways. So I still think if it's me, I'm adding a defenseman before a forward, but I think based on what we've seen so far the past couple of years, they're going to add a forward.
And Cam Fowler and Hampus Lindholm, really good defensemen. They're not Duncan Keith. They're not Alex Pietrangelo, or Brent Seabrook. I mean, these are good young defensemen, but when you go up against the big boys in the Central Division, I think there leaves a little bit to be desired. So I'm in agreement with Rich. Maybe they, instead of moving one of their young defensemen to get a forward, maybe they move one of their young defensemen to get another defenseman, right? Or maybe they package up a forward. You've got some, Sean Horkoff obviously was suspended, but you've got guys like Perron and Chris Stewart who are pending UFAs.
Stewart out of the lineup
Stewart's out of the lineup. Yeah. Do they maybe, try to move probably more a guy like Perron, but Perron they just acquired. So I would expect Perron to not get moved. I like this Ducks team. I also think the Ducks have kind of gone under the radar a little bit, even though they've won 8 in a row here. So this is a team that's probably going to make one or two moves before Monday.
The last team in the Pacific Division that we expect to be a playoff team is the San Jose Sharks. They have the least amount of cap space in the entire NHL entering Monday, with $794,000 available for them to play with. They already made a couple of trades a couple weeks ago with the Toronto Maple Leafs, acquiring Roman Polak and Nick Spaulding.
Yeah, that was an overpay.
In exchange for 2 second-round picks, one in 2017, one in 2018, and Rafi Torres, but that doesn't matter. So the Sharks are sort of locked into that third spot in the Pacific Division. Yeah, conceivably they could catch up to Anaheim or Los Angeles, but I would be surprised if that happens. Is this the typical Sharks team that's not quite good enough to get past the Ducks and the Kings when push comes to shove?
Probably, Drew. The way I look at it is, can the Sharks beat the Kings and the Ducks? Yes. Can the Sharks beat the Kings and the Ducks if they all three of them play their best? No, I don't think so. If the Kings are in the top of their game, I don't think the Sharks can beat them. If the Ducks are at the top of their game, then the Sharks have a better chance of beating the Ducks, but I still don't think they beat them. I think if the Ducks or Kings struggle a bit, I think the Sharks can beat a team that's struggling. Like, they're very good. I just don't. The matchups aren't good for the Sharks. The Sharks, they play an exceptionally solid style. I always like DeBoer's teams. They play a good structure. They move the puck well. They have depth. They have guys like Pavelski and Marleau and Couture who can play center and wing, and you can switch the lines and the combinations, and you've solidified your back end. You have Vlasic, who's a tremendous defenseman. He's got a lot of points this year, too.
Mm-hmm.
And your back end, and then you add Polak. Again, I thought that was an overpay, but you solidify. You get a heavier third-pairing guy. All that said, I don't think they penetrate the middle enough to be able to beat those big teams.
Everything's on the outside.
Yeah.
I agree with Richie, Drew. I mean, I think that San Jose isn't going to be extremely active. I do agree also that San Jose is not as good of a team as either of the teams above them in their division. But something about the Sharks scares me, and I got to give you credit, Drew. You were the only one of the three of us that picked the Sharks to make the playoffs. I thought the Sharks were going to be completely out of it at this time of the year. But how can you ever count out a team that has Joe Thornton and Patrick Marleau and Logan Couture and Joe Pavelski, who's one of the best goal scorers in the NHL, mm-hmm. and Brent Burns, as you guys know, is one of my favorites, and mm-hmm. Edward Vlasic, as Richie mentioned. I mean, this is a pretty good team, but it's just not a very deep team. And, you know, you have guys on the bottom lines that just they're not producing enough, and they're not the right mix, I think, for this team. But, you know, Roman Polak, Nick Spaulding, you know, you improve your depth. So I wouldn't expect them to be that active.
They've made their moves with the Polak and Spaulding acquisitions.
That would be my guess. Maybe they make one or two minor moves.
Only thing I could see, maybe a backup goaltender, Alex Stalock, really struggling.
Well, maybe
this
year. We said Hutchinson earlier, maybe something like that. But I guess I was talking significant moves. But yeah, if you're talking one move, then yeah, backup goaltender would be something that they may address. But does that really have an effect on what they do? And you can't give up too much for a backup goaltender here.
No, because, I mean, well, Martin Jones is your guy, and, I mean, you know, it's a disaster. If you have to go to any other goaltender besides Martin Jones,
you're probably done.
You don't have a chance. Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll look at the bottom feeders in the Pacific Division. They are interesting because they have a lot of assets to sell. We'll talk about the Canucks, the Coyotes, the Oilers, and the Flames when we return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Trade Deadline Preview Show on TSN 1290.
Listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew, Ezra, and Richard return on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Coming up at 9:30 this morning, Jonas Siegel, the national hockey writer for the Canadian Press, will join us to talk about the trade deadline. This segment brought to you by the Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. For more information about the Linden Market Dental Center, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com.
You know, Drew, while you and Richie were gone, I had to host the show.
It's true.
That was a week and a half ago. That was the Wednesday show, and I was doing the Les Rikus read, and I had to say, don't be me. Because I couldn't say, don't be an Ezzy. That would be talking in the third person, Richie.
Me.
So it was a little bit tough, but I definitely got a new appreciation for Drew's job as a host, because I'm used to sitting here in the middle. And Drew's always throwing it to either Richie or myself. But hosting, I mean, not only the sponsorship reads, but you got to really quarterback the whole show. So
while we were all away, you and Richard were together at a bachelor party in Miami. And Rich, you had to put up with this for about 4 or 5 days.
Four nights.
This, of course, is the sound of Ezzy snoring.
I'm giving you high praise, and then you pull out a clip of me snoring.
You had a fake Drew on the show when I was not here.
Which was hilarious, by the way.
By the way, people love that
fake Drew.
Drew
is so funny.
People like fake Drew way more than real Drew.
Shout out to Benji.
Sure.
Yeah. But so this is the sound of you snoring. Rich, how did you handle this for 4 days?
I lost my mind.
I don't think it's that bad.
You don't think this is that bad?
I actually lost my mind.
This is kind of, I almost think it's like a kind of calming sound.
I'm not feeling well now, and you have to think that the lack of sleep for 4 days in a row played a factor in that.
Also, you may have had enough alcohol in your body to tranquilize a rhinoceros.
Hold on. If you're going to throw me under the bus here with my snoring.
Yeah.
Okay, so we were down in Miami.
Uh-huh.
We saw the Jets-Panthers play. We stayed right on Ocean Drive. I thought Rory was going to keep that plane.
Yeah,
for
Rory, keep it up.
Keep going there, right?
People can realize what I had to deal with.
Okay, so the second last night we're down in Miami. We had this nice suite. We did an Airbnb. It was a nice big place. We had a balcony. I went outside and slept on the balcony for the second last night to give my friend some relief. So I realize I snore, and sometimes it can be annoying. But I actually went and slept outside so that Rich, Mr.
Slept,
you know, Princess
out.
Here.
I mean, there, you know, it's hard.
No,
to
I woke up. That was the thing. The third night, and I woke up and I was like, "Where's Ezzy?" Because I was actually sleeping. First time I was sleeping, and I got up and I went to look for him, and he was passed out.
When did you record me snoring?
This is the old clip.
This is the old clip. I sent you the new clip, Drew. Why are you using the new clip? He's worse now than he was 2 years ago.
You know, I compared the two. This one comes through better on air.
Okay, let me just
If anybody wants the new clip of Ezzy snoring, just tweet at us. I'll send it out to you.
I'll tell you a good
It's a video, actually.
It's a video, yeah.
We can vine it.
So Ezzy was snoring like every night. Couldn't handle it anymore, okay? And there was one day, I think it was on Monday. No, it was Tuesday, right? I just pulled up my iPad. I had some work to do. I was doing some work, and I was sitting inside the condo.
Okay? Thank God Rory stopped the snoring.
All right, and everybody, I was doing some work in the condo, and everybody was outside. And as he just as he just rolls in, and he's like, "Hey, Richie, what are you doing?" I'm like, "Oh, I'm just doing some work, just not for too long." And he's like, "Oh, okay, cool." And he sits down on the couch beside me, passes out in 2 seconds, and starts snoring immediately. You couldn't get away from him. All right.
Anyways, I had to play that. I mean, the fake Drew was very funny, but, you know, turnabout is fair play here, of course, on
Legal
Curve.
I was praising you for the great job that you do as a host and how hard it is. And you know what? I take everything back.
There you go. That's all I ask. Arizona Coyotes. They have probably right now, you know, you can make the argument either it's Mikhail Bodker or it's Louis Erickson as to which one of those two is the biggest. Erickson's
better,
fine, but Bodker's
younger. Erickson
too. Eric Stahl, too. Yeah, fine. Anyways, those are the three big names of trade chips that are on the market heading into Monday now that Andrew Ladd's off the market. Where does Bodker go? Arizona's a team that had a nice start to the season, but they're clearly not going to be a playoff team. They're 8 points behind Colorado. Where does Bodker end up on Monday before Monday?
I do think it probably, you know, you're going to look at teams like L.A. and Anaheim who are going to have interest there, I think. I mean, I think a lot of teams are going to have interest in Michael Bodker. He can skate really well, and he can make plays. He's a second-line winger. He's not, you know, I mean, I guess he can play on your top line if you need him to, but in reality, if you're really going to go far, I think he needs to be your second-line winger. And so those are a couple teams, but I think there's no question that he goes. What the Coyotes get back, I just think it's the best player possible. I don't think the Coyotes are... You know, they have a lot of young talent.
Sure.
They have a lot of young talent in the system, on the current roster. I don't think they particularly care what they get back, as long as it's, like, meaning position-wise, as long as it's a good player.
Is it a prospect and a first? Do they get what the Jets got for Ladd?
Probably.
Yeah, I would think that you're trying to get a first-rounder and a prospect. You might get more than what Andrew Ladd got. Mikhail Bodker, if you've watched the Coyotes, and we have... over the years, Mikhail Bodker is a great two-way player,
mm-hmm.
and he's not a guy that you're going to see in the top 20 NHL scoring. I mean, he's not a 90, 80-point guy. He's more in the kind of 40, 50-point range. But, you know, Rich mentions the LA Kings being a good fit. I also look at the Eastern Conference and teams like Detroit, Florida, teams that are going to make the playoffs, Rich, and teams that are skilled teams, and that he could fit in, whether that's, you know, putting him on the first line, second line, third line, whatever. Very versatile player.
Mm-hmm.
So I could see, you know, a team like the Wings, who are a very skilled team, maybe...
He would fit into what they're trying to do.
Panthers, who have the cap room,
mm-hmm.
right? So I think there's going to be a lot of teams after Mikhail Bodker. I agree with you, Drew. I think after Eric Stahl, it's Bodker and Erickson, who apparently the Boston Bruins are trying to sign Erickson. I mean, they don't have a lot of time here.
Or cap space.
You're right. And I think Don Maloney's in a great position right now. Don Maloney... We've had on the show, super nice guy,
mm-hmm.
very intelligent guy, deserves a lot of credit for the Keith Yandle trade. You talk about Dylan Strome's going to come into the NHL next year. He's going to be the first-line center that they've always needed.
Mm-hmm.
They got a guy like Nick Merkley, who they got with the other first-round pick. You know, they've got a lot of prospects coming up through the system. Max Domi, Anthony Duclair, these are rookies. The Coyotes, I think, are in a really good position. Bodker's going to bring another draft pick, another prospect. I think the Coyotes are heading in the right direction.
I mean, I think they would probably try and move Boyd Gordon, too, if they can. Obviously, his cap hits a lot, but if they, I don't think they've retained too many salaries as of now. They've retained one, so they can retain salary. They've retained Yandle. So if they retain salary and give somebody Boyd Gordon to play on the fourth line, I think that might be something, but you're not getting much for him.
Let's head to break. When we come back, we'll bring in Jonas Siegel, the Canadian Press's national hockey writer. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, trade deadline preview show on TSN 1290.